Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Last week, the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee held a confirmation hearing for David Bernhardt, a former lobbyist and spokesperson for the oil and gas industry, who was recently nominated to head the Department of the Interior. He has been running the department since early January when Ryan Zinke resigned under an ethics cloud. The promotion gives David Bernhardt enormous power to continue with his plans to relax key federal regulations, including weakening the endangered species protections and wildlife laws, opening massive amounts of public lands to more drilling, and also taking on the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Recently, Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting reported on a private meeting of oil industry executives in Southern California in June 2017, where two executives of the Independent Petroleum Association of America boasted about their access to David Bernhardt. Dan Natz, the political director of the association, said Bernhardt, who had the number two position at the Department of the Interior at the time, meant that their priorities would be heard at the highest level of the department. The department oversees one-fifth of the U.S. land surface from Alaska to the Gulf of Mexico. So what is in store for the future of our public lands and the many regulations that protect wildlife and cultural and historical landmarks? And what will it take to keep the public in public lands? To explore these issues, we are joined by two guests. Sharon Buccino is Director of the Land and Wildlife Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council, or NRDC, a nonprofit environmental organization. And Sharon joins us from Washington, D.C. Hi, Sharon. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. We're also joined by Elizabeth Shogren, a science reporter for Reveal at the Center for Investigative Reporting, where she covers the Department of the Interior and National Parks. Last year, Elizabeth broke a story about the National Park Service trying to censor science about the human causes of climate change. Elizabeth was an environment correspondent for NPR's National and Science Desks. And Elizabeth also joins us from Washington, D.C. Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be here.
It's great to have you. So before we dive in and talk about David Bernhardt and public lands and what's happening under the Trump administration on these issues, let's just talk about what the Interior Department actually does. It manages roughly one-fifth of all the land in the United States. So Elizabeth, why don't you start off and tell us what falls under the department's purview?
Well, it's an enormous department that people rarely think about. It's all of our national parks, you can imagine, from sea to shining sea, and a lot of other public lands that you might just know as public lands or Bureau of Land Management lands, especially in the West. Vast parts of our western states are full of this kind of land that's run by and managed by the Interior Department. And it's also the offshore oil and gas leasing, and the onshore oil and gas leasing. And when they drill, and most of the coal that we get in our nation comes from public lands. And so there's a lot of jobs that the Interior Department has. It also oversees issues that the United States has with Native American tribes and their reservations. It's the Interior Department that does that too. And also our big reservoirs, our water systems, our dams, that's all the Interior Department.
Sharon, what would you add?
Well, Elizabeth covered it very well. I'll add just a couple things, which is that in some ways, these lands and waters that the Interior Department manage are some of our most valuable assets as Americans, and they are assets that belong to each and every one of us. There are assets in terms of natural resources, whether it's production of energy from these lands, but there are also a number of other valuable uses of these lands, which often conflict. But what's most important, I think, is the role that the Interior Department and the Secretary of the Interior Department play as stewards. They are holding these assets in trust for all of us.
So last week, the Mueller report took so much of the media's attention, and there wasn't as much attention about the Senate confirmation hearing for Acting Interior Secretary David Bernhardt. Let's talk a little bit about David Bernhardt. Sharon, your organization, NRDC, the Action Fund, sent out an alert this morning saying, "Act now, block Trump's dangerous Interior Department nominee." Let's talk a little bit about him. So prior to his current stint at the Interior as the number two, David Bernhardt worked for 8 years at the law firm Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck, where he lobbied on behalf of oil, gas, mining, and agricultural interests. And as a lobby, as a lawyer, he lobbied for Halliburton and the Independent Petroleum Association of America, which is a trade group. They represent dozens of oil companies. What do we need to know about David Bernhardt and his time at that law firm and what he did as a lobbyist?
Well, a couple things. Just the list of who he represented is quite telling, and they are companies and former clients of his are really their interest is it's a financial interest, and it's an interest in extracting and destroying the various lands and waters that the Interior Department does manage for all of us. And one big problem, it's not only the conflict between that private profit interest and the public interest, but it also, and this was one of the things that came out in the hearing last week, that we do have ethical obligations and limits on our federal stewards and federal public servants, the people who are in these leadership positions. There are requirements on the books that limit the issues that they can be involved in, and they're supposed to recuse themselves and take themselves out of issues that they have some connection with. Here, his whole background is working for companies who are regulated by the Interior Department, yet we're considering him to head that very department.
Elizabeth, what would you add? What else do we need to know about David Bernhardt when he worked for this law firm and where he lobbied on behalf of oil and gas companies?
Well, it wasn't just oil and gas companies. It was a lot of other industries as well. And that's important to know because the kinds of issues that he's overseeing will have impacts on all different industries and on lots of our resources, from waterways to public lands. And one of the things that was telling to me about the way that he's had to, what they call it, recuse yourself, which means he's not supposed to participate in decisions that impact his old clients. And many of those recusals are about to expire, and so that means he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to stay out of those decisions. I think he said in August, that's when many of those decisions expire. And he was pressed about whether that's right, whether those recusals should go away. And he basically, described himself as, I think he used the term star quarterback. That's what I remember anyway, but that's the idea. Like he's the country's star quarterback on these issues, and you wouldn't want him sitting on the bench. You'd want him in there working for the American people on the American team on these issues. And I think it's really interesting both, I think he probably does legitimately think that he's working for the American people on these issues. But his background is very strongly oriented on working for the industry side, and I would guess that he would say that that's in the American people's interest. One of the things that became clear to me about what does it mean to be recused, the Independent Petroleum Association of America was one of his clients, and he is recused from working on their issues. The Independent Petroleum Association of America has been pushing for very many changes at the Department of Interior. One of those changes, and many of those changes have been made under the leadership of David Bernhardt at the Department of Interior. But when asked whether or not he worked on those changes of those issues, the Interior Department's spokeswoman told me that, yes, in fact, he had been able to work on those issues, and he was very much involved in those decisions, even though they were priorities of his former clients, because that wasn't considered somehow a conflict of interest. And one example of that is the Migratory Bird Treaty Act was reinterpreted under this administration. This 100-year-old protection for birds was gutted, basically done away with, and not the law is still there, but the responsibility to protect birds from industries that kill lots of them is gone, and it's no longer a crime under the interpretation that was pushed by David Bernhardt. And so it just coincidentally was also something that the IPAA wanted, the Independent Petroleum Association of America, his former client. And it's true, if you go down the list with various protections for our environment that this current administration has decided to strike, they are on all the industry wish lists, getting rid of all these protections. And it's been done even before Bernhardt was the acting secretary. He was the deputy secretary, so he's been involved in all of these decisions.
Elizabeth, Reveal, you had a report last July. You reported for Reveal. You went to an oil operation in northern Wyoming to see firsthand how birds are affected by oil pits. And it really was an incredible piece, because this is something you hear about, but to feel like you're there with you is a completely different experience. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But can you talk about the role that David Bernhardt played in gutting protections for migratory birds?
Well, actually, I can, and I can do that because I filed a Freedom of Information Act request with the Department of Interior a little more than a year ago, actually, and I didn't receive any responses for months, and so my organization sued, and finally, 10 months after I filed those requests, I did start getting responses, and they show mostly the responses were blacked out or blanked out, so there was lots of redaction going on. But what I was able to see from the emails that were provided to me is that Acting Secretary Bernhardt played a significant role. The email said that his office was engaged from day one on the reinterpretation of the protections, stripping the protections for migratory birds, and you could see him pushing to have that process go faster. You could see him engaged on it, and you could see him wanting to know what the Justice Department lawyers thought of it. And when the Justice Department lawyers raised a lot of their concerns, he was chit-chatting back and forth with the head lawyer at Interior, Daniel Giorgiani, who's up to be the solicitor of Interior, but he's been acting as the head lawyer since the very beginning. And they're kind of chatting about how change isn't easy, and that it's going to be hard to basically get everybody to come on board with the new era. And that's my the second sentence was my interpretation of what they're saying back and forth to each other, not a direct quote. But you know, it's clear this was very much something that he was involved in and maybe even directed.
Elizabeth, what did you see when you flew over oil pits in northern Wyoming? Again, it's hard to visualize this when you hear about it, but you took us right there, and we kind of felt like we were with you, and you were talking to people who have to, you know, deal with birds when they get caught in these oil pits. I mean, it was actually kind of really hard to listen to, because in some cases they have to kill these birds because they don't have a chance of living.
Yeah, I mean, I was really, this was really powerful to me too, because, you know, I'm not a birder, I'm not a bird person. I respect wildlife, but it's not my thing, right? So, but that said, you know, these are these people who wanted to show me what they know about what taking away these protections means were the law enforcement agents for the Fish and Wildlife Service. And they came up, this was in the first Bush administration. So, this is a long time ago. They came up with a plan to help save birds. And the reason that they knew a lot of birds were dying in oil pits is that they had, they were private pilots, and they would fly themselves over, over the West, and they'd see these ponds that were clearly covered in oil, and you can see the oil from the air. You can see the black goo on top of these pits, or the rainbow sheens. You can really see it from these little pits, from the airplane looking down over these pits. And that's what they took me up in a little plane, and they showed me how these pits can be covered with oil. And we went down on the ground, and we inspected one of the oil well sites, and we saw feathers in oil and eggs in oil and an egg in oil. And you know, birds, they told me their stories of how many birds got caught in these pits, and they would have to literally wrench their necks because they were not going to make it. And so they came up with this plan to basically fly over the West and point out the oily areas, and then they would have to I'm so sorry. Can you move back to Sharon? Oh, never mind. They'll leave me alone. Someone was knocking. Excuse me about that.
Oh,
so
okay.
So the oily pits were we saw from the air, anyway. So, and they told me how they came up with this plan to make sure that oil companies would clean up their pits, and they did. And when they didn't, they fined them, and even sometimes they prosecuted them through the Justice Department.
Wow. Sharon, once this administration is gone, is there a way to quickly bring back protections for migratory birds?
Well, I guess the way I would respond to that is we hope we don't have to wait until this administration is gone. What they've done is arguably illegal, and so NRDC and others have actually challenged this action by the Interior Department and challenged the lawfulness of their interpretation of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. And it does bring up another thing that I wanted to share, which is really across the board now, Trump's lawlessness is really catching up with him. And we just had a decision out of Alaska over the weekend at the very end of last week, which was really just one in a string of decisions recently by federal judges saying to the Trump administration and to the Interior Department in particular, not so fast. You know, we are a country that is governed by the rule of law and not the whim of individuals. And so the decision in Alaska related to the Trump administration's revocation of the withdrawal of lands offshore in both the Arctic and Atlantic from drilling, and the court made clear that the action that the Trump administration had taken was not within the authority that Congress had given the president.
Sharon, the NRDC has filed so many lawsuits against this administration, and this just speaks to the importance of the courts and judges. And last week, we did a show about how Trump is really filling so many vacancies. Can you just talk about this? I mean, you all have been filing many, many lawsuits against this administration, right? I understand that you're actually the lead counsel in the suit against the administration over the shrinking of bears' ears.
Yes, so I am one of the attorneys involved in that case. And I've worked as an attorney at NRDC for over 25 years now. I came to NRDC and I came to Washington because I believed in the role of law and the important role of the courts. I believed in the good that government can do, and I still believe in that. But we are seeing some of the basic tenets of our democracy really stretched and pushed to an edge. And of course, the courts, the judiciary as one of our three branches of government, are one of those checks and balances. We are taught through school that the judges are, that is not a place for politics. It is a place that you want to have people sitting on the bench who are looking at the legal precedents, the plain language of the statutes that are involved, in an impartial way, in a way that is not influenced by their political party and their politics. And unfortunately, our judiciary has become quite polarized, in the same way that a lot of the mechanisms of governing in Washington have become. And as a society, we need to try to move back and find that common ground. And Trump's actions across the board, but in particular, we've seen in the judiciary and the people that he's nominated, and who have been a large number of them have been confirmed to the bench, that is increasing rather than decreasing the polarization of our courts and society.
Elizabeth, what would you add? As a reporter, how do you report on the role of the federal courts in challenging the Trump administration's anti-environment policies?
You know, this is such an interesting issue for me. Before I joined Reveal, I did some reporting for High Country News, where I was a staffer, and also on freelance, about this very issue of what is going on with the judges in our country. And I don't think people really have a grasp of how it happens, but what had happened is that the Senate had refused to confirm the judges that President Obama had appointed to many judgeships. So President Trump came in and he had an incredible number of openings of judges. I don't have the number in front of me, but it was extraordinary because of what had happened, because the Senate had refused to confirm judges that President Obama had picked. So with all of these openings, it set up President Trump and the Republicans who control the Senate to have a chance to determine a lot of judgeships, way more than you would normally have happen. And so so we've seen that happen to date. Some people talk about President Trump being so distracted with scandals that he's not getting things done. But I can tell you, when you look at the judge appointments, and also what's been going on in regulatory changes at the Interior Department, that is not true. This has been an incredibly efficient and an incredibly accomplished administration. They've done what they want to do. And one of the things that you notice with the appointees that President Trump has named to many of these federal judge openings, many of them are very young, and many of them have very, very strong ideological backgrounds, and their experience also shows decisions that I think a lot of people would consider to be pro-industry and anti-environment. And so it is a big story, and it's one that needs to be covered in this administration, and to see there will be an impact, a lasting impact for decades after President Trump has left office. Mm.
Elizabeth Shogren is a science reporter for Reveal at the Center for Investigative Reporting, former environment correspondent for NPR's National and Science Desks. We're also joined by Sharon Buccino, director of the Land and Wildlife Program at NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, where she has been an attorney for over 25 years. Today, it is Your Calls, One Planet series, and we are talking about David Bernhardt, Donald Trump's pick to run the U.S. Department of the Interior. We'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call us at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to yourcall@kalw.org or leave a comment at the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Is there a crisis at the southern border? That's the topic on 1A, 1/2 hour from now at 11 o'clock here on 91.7 KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about what it will take to stop sexual abuse in immigrant detention facilities. We'll talk about a 10-month investigation by Rewire News and NPR's Latino USA that found that the process meant to hold detention centers accountable is failing survivors. And then on Wednesday, we'll talk about the co-editors of a new book called Solido Solida, Crossing Borders with Youth Refugees from Central America. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. Today, it is our One Planet series. We are talking about David Bernhardt, Donald Trump's pick to run the U.S. Department of the Interior. He spent many years as a lobbyist for coal, oil, gas, mining and agriculture companies. And if you have any questions about David Bernhardt, what's happening at the Department of the Interior, with so much attention on the Mueller report, we have not heard much about what is happening there. And as Elizabeth Shogren said, Donald Trump has been incredibly successful when it comes to giving the oil, gas, and other industries exactly what they want. So what questions do you have? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Elizabeth Shogren is a science reporter for Reveal at the Center for Investigative Reporting. I hope you can take the time to listen to the piece that she did last July when she went to an oil operation in northern Wyoming and actually flew over oil pits to find out what happens to birds when they land in the pits. Elizabeth is a former environment correspondent for NPR. We're also joined by Sharon Buccino, director of the Land and Wildlife Program at the Natural Resources Defense Council, where she has been an attorney for over 25 years, and they have filed many lawsuits against the Trump administration. Sharon, since you have been an attorney for 25 years, I'm wondering, when we reported on the George W. Bush administration, and Dick Cheney, former Halliburton CEO, was the vice president, and we reported on so many backdoor meetings between the administration and industry writing laws, what would you say are the main differences between, when you're specifically talking about leasing public lands for oil and gas, what are the differences between George W. Bush, that administration, and the Trump administration?
So a couple things. And first, there are a lot of similarities, but a couple of key differences. One is that, and I was here then, and I was involved in litigation then. One, we did bring litigation under the Freedom of Information Act to get access to some of those documents of the Cheney Energy Task Force. But one of the key differences now is that I would say at least at that time, the the parties, people in Washington may have different policy solutions and different philosophies and ideologies, but everybody was playing by the same rules of the game. And now we have people in charge of these agencies and the government. I mean, they are still the public servants, but they're not playing by the rules of the game. They don't have a respect for as I mentioned before, the basic rule of law, and that is very destabilizing. And so that's one key difference. And then for me, I have to say that the other key difference is the moment in time we find ourselves. And NRDC was advocating to address climate change back in the early 2000s. But even now, there really is no debate about the need to address climate change. And we are feeling the consequences of catastrophic climate events now. It's not just something in the future. And how we are managing our federal fossil fuels, the oil, gas, and coal on our public lands, is a critical piece of how we respond to climate change. So to have an administration that ignores that and is working affirmatively in the other direction. I mean, so look, take one statistic. We now, as a country, have become the largest crude oil producer in the world. We're the biggest carbon polluter in history, and we're ranking only behind China in greenhouse gas emissions. So this is something really to be ashamed of instead of proud of, which is what our current administration is.
Hmm. Elizabeth, do you have anything to add about the differences between the Bush administration and the Trump administration?
You know what? One of the clearest differences, I think, is the world that we're living in. And there's a different world, just as Sharon Buccino was saying, climate change is a bigger, more urgent problem to us now. I was talking with a long-term National Park Service scientist, and she was telling me that she was describing the difference between the administrations, and she was saying during the Bush administration, there was an effort to ignore climate change science. But basically what that boiled down to was not paying for studies that would help to understand climate change and to think about climate change for the future. But now you fast forward to the current day, and ignoring climate change means censoring research that already is underway and ignoring impacts that are happening before our very eyes. And so it's a very different, it's the same kind of general idea, is let's not try to make a big deal about climate change, because we don't want to admit that climate change is here, because then we'd have to do something about our fossil fuel appetite. But the world we live in is very different. So how that's executed is different too.
And then to also bring in the Obama administration into this, in September 2016, DSmog had a piece called Obama Administration Quietly Enables Oil and Gas Drilling on Public Lands and Waters and Weakens the Endangered Species Act. They report that the administration opened up 119 million acres for offshore drilling leases in the Gulf of Mexico. And then just recently, on March 20th, the New York Times had a piece by Coral Davenport. And it says the Obama administration violated federal law by failing to adequately take into account the climate change impact of leasing public land for oil, gas drilling in Wyoming, a federal judge ruled. The decision by the United States District Court for the District of Columbia could also present a legal threat to Trump's agenda to quickly expand oil and gas drilling and coal mining across the nation's public lands and waters. And that's because the decision amounts to a roadmap that could be used to challenge hundreds of Trump administration's leases as well. Sharon, can you tell us, what does this mean exactly?
Sure. And I'm not going to sit here and say the last administration was perfect, because there were, a number, this decision that you refer to here, which related to leases in Wyoming, was originated in the last administration. But I think one thing that I observed as the last administration was coming to a close, I really think there was a difference in their approach to managing fossil fuels, federal fossil fuels, in the last year or so than they had exhibited early on. Part of it was, I think, very much the role that Obama's children had on him, and how he thought about climate, and he recognized that what we were doing in leasing our oil, gas, and coal it was taking away our children's future. And so his administration at the end did put a moratorium in place on new coal leasing. That has been lifted. But this decision out of Washington, D.C. actually is one in a series of decisions that is holding the government, and here in particular the Bureau of Land Management, responsible for assessing the impacts of the emissions, the greenhouse gas emissions, when the oil, gas, or coal is burned and used, including those impacts and the impacts that the National Environmental Policy Act require the government to assess. And that has, the government has come to that kicking and screaming and has refused to do it. And now you have one court after the next saying this is a legal obligation and this is part of the responsibility that the federal government has to assess the environmental consequences of its actions.
And so at this point, can you give us an overview of how much public lands have been leased out to gas and oil companies under this administration?
Well, it is. I can definitely give you a sense of the rate, and it's a significantly greater rate than in the previous administration. I think it's about the amount of lands that have been opened for drilling by the Trump administration is currently at about three times the previous rate, and it affects a lot of different places across the West. I guess it's important to me to come back to some of these basic elements of democracy and the strain that the process and the way that this administration is going about leasing these lands is just as important as the number of acres that are leased, because what we're seeing happen is that even though these are the public lands, this administration is taking the public out of the decision-making process. That is being done through limitations of the opportunity to comment. Again, this comes under the National Environmental Policy Act. There is a clear mandate to include the public in decisions that affect them. And it also goes back to the issue that Elizabeth raised earlier, and that is transparency and the failure to be willing to let the public know, to shine the light of day on what their government is doing with their lands. This administration's compliance with the Freedom of Information Act, and the Interior Department in particular, their compliance is pathetic. And they are being sued left and right. And it's not only an affront to the public and our democracy, but it's an incredible waste of taxpayer money.
And Elizabeth, I mean, especially for people who live in cities, a lot of people don't really know what happens when these lands are leased for gas and oil. Can you give us a specific example of what happens? What do the studies show? You know, what happens after these lands are used by oil and gas companies?
That's a really good question. I think that one of the clearest images that comes to my mind is comes from the very neck of the woods where David Bernhardt is from. And he's from a part of western Colorado. I think it's Rifle is his hometown. And the county is called Garfield County. And I did a investigation for when I was at NPR about the air pollution that comes from oil and gas rigs. And I went to Garfield County. And if you can imagine, like, this is this beautiful western area of Colorado where a lot of people have gone to live kind of quiet lives. And it happens to have a lot of public lands nearby. And it just so happens that when the oil and gas rigs come in, they can end up like right next to your house or in your little kind of rural neighborhood. And I saw several places where that had happened. I'm not sure when I'm thinking back in my mind's eye whether the particular community that I saw, whether that place was public lands, but there were lots of places that I saw were public lands. And then if these drill rigs go in, it's not just like a well, like your water well, that might be drilled one time and then all the industrial machines go away and the well does its business of producing the oil and gas. In fact, they usually, just to begin with, drill multiple wells from this same well pad, and so the machinery and the polluting machines that come in to drill the well stay for a long time, and then they have to come back and rework the well for many times. So it's all the heavy trucks going back and forth along the roads, and all the wells that all the machinery that is pumping out pollution, and then even while the wells are producing, the question is, what happens to the air pollution? What happens to the? Do they flare if they're not capturing the gas? Do they flare it? And if they have a flare there, how effective is the flare? Are there methane emissions? Are there other toxic pollution just coming out of the well routinely? So and then of course there's the possibility of water pollution as well. It's really changed what the West looks like, this oil boom that we have going on, because there's so many places where people live, and now they have company with this huge industrial process, which is very spread out. One of the things that I think many Americans don't even know is that last year, and President Trump basically accomplished his big goal, which is to become energy dominant. The United States became the largest producer of petroleum on the planet. So outpacing Saudi Arabia and Russia last year. And so we're now number one in crude oil production. And so it's crude oil production, in fact, not petroleum in general. And so, you know, we have this kind of, you know, and in order to make all that crude oil, there's a lot of wells that have gone in across the West, and it changes the life of people who live there.
Mm. And Sharon, Timothy Egan, an opinion writer for the New York Times, wrote a piece just yesterday, I believe, "Your public lands are killing you. We are squandering millions of acres of our children's inheritance and using it to destroy the planet." And he writes, "What you may not know is that while you were sleeping through the white noise from the White House, your public servants were put under the control of the oil and gas industry. They have been busy giving away drilling rights on your land for next to nothing, more precisely per acre, for even less than the cost of a bacon McDouble, he writes, which of course you should eat only in moderation. So his point is that these leases are extremely inexpensive and these companies are making a lot of money off of them. Can you also talk about that point, Sharon?
Sure, because I think what he's pointing to is that in addition to the social irresponsibility that's happening in terms of leading us further off the cliff to climate catastrophe, there's also an incredible fiscal irresponsibility to the action, and that these are, even if you are going to sell off your oil, gas, and coal, as taxpayers, we want to do it at least fair market value, or when we're at a time when we're going to get a good amount for those resources. And what's happening now is these leases are, as he points out, they're going for next to nothing. But that lease conveys a legal right, a right to develop that land, and so it's a loss both to the treasury as well as a loss to our children's future. I would be remiss, I think, not to at least bring us to a positive point that has happened in Washington as we near our conclusion of the conversation, and this is action that came out of Congress, and it was just a couple weeks ago. President Trump did sign what was really the most sweeping lands and water protection bill in the whole time I've been in Washington, so for a quarter of a century, and it happened because that bill passed both the Senate and the House in overwhelming numbers, so the president did not have a choice but to sign it. If he had vetoed it, he would have been overridden in Congress. And the bill did a number of things, but two things most significantly. It had over 1 million acres of wilderness protection. A lot of it was in Utah. Some of the lands that were now designated as wilderness by Congress, and it is only Congress that can provide that permanent protection under the Wilderness Act, those were some of the same lands that we were fighting over during the Bush and Cheney days. And we fought and won in court to preserve the option of Congress to protect them permanently. And at the time when I thought it was least likely that they would do so, you had representatives, senators from both parties coming together around something that everybody could agree on, and that is the value of protecting lands and waters. You know, they're good. That protection is good for our health. It's good for our economy. And you know what? It's even good for our soul. And it was uplifting to see Congress be able to, kind of pull themselves together and actually get something done.
Interesting. So just quickly, Sharon, how do you explain this, that Republicans voted for this law while at the same time you know, successfully working to roll back environmental regulations?
Well, I think what explains it is that their constituents were demanding protection of specific places that people cared about in their backyards. I saw one reference to the fact that there was something for nearly every state in this bill, and so it was a packaging together of a lot of things that had been worked on for a long time, but it was that people value having that open space and that access to nature. They value what it does both for their health and the local economies. And another thing that happened was, and this was the Utah piece of it, Senator Orrin Hatch had been one of the most vocal proponents of the shrinking of Bears Ears and Grand Staircase National Monuments in Utah. But he was leaving Washington. He was leaving Congress, and I think that he wanted to bring home something rather than nothing in terms of protection. And there were some leaders on the Hill who ensured that in that negotiation with Hatch, it was Senator Durbin who really led the way and ensured that that negotiation produced something that we could truly celebrate.
Well, thank you for bringing that to the show. Elizabeth, we have about a minute left. Taking it back to David Bernhardt, when is the Senate expected to vote on his confirmation to lead the Department of the Interior?
You know, they haven't set a date yet as far as I know, so we don't know that yet, but it should be soon.
Okay, and can we assume that he's probably going to be confirmed? Are you hearing anything from senators?
You know, I would not say he got that much pushback in the. I can't see it not happening. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not really into predicting what Congress is doing, but I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be confirmed. And I think he will be the secretary.
I think part of that is that great that you're doing this show on this topic, because I think people really don't understand what's at stake and therefore are not conveying the opposition to the members to the senators who will vote on this.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Sharon Buccino is director of the Land and Wildlife Program at the NRDC, where she's been an attorney for over 25 years. Sharon, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. A pleasure.
Elizabeth Shogren is a science reporter for Reveal at the Center for Investigative Reporting, where she covers the Department of the Interior and National Parks. And Elizabeth is a former environment correspondent for NPR. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your great reporting, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. And you can find more information about David Bernhardt and the Department of the Interior at yourcallradio.org. You can also find links to Elizabeth Shogren's reporting. And thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. You can find more information about Your Call, listen to past shows, and sign up for our podcast at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Kevin Vance, our studio engineer, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call's One Planet series.